Hollywood. There's got to be other words to that, right?
No, I think that's it. I think it's just a series of da da da's.
Hooray for Hollywood.
Yeah.
Also, can we do like a. Well, let's introduce the show. We got a lot to do here. Hello, everyone. This is the 264th episode of What's in the Box Office, your weekly look at movies and the money they make. Each week, we sit down and pore over the weekend's box office returns and tell you what we think they mean for the industry at large. I'm your host, Brian.
And I'm just Noah.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you.
Can you do like a breaking news? We used to do podcast news back in the day. Fresh off the wire, an Instagram post today. Neve Campbell said that she's been asked back and is happy to return to Scream 7, which is now known only as Untitled Scream 7, and will be directed by original Scream writer Kevin Williamson.
Wow.
And a script penned by Guy Busick.
Wow, Williamson's not writing it? He's coming back, but he's not writing. Right. Wow.
The story is by the Radio Silence Boys.
Okay.
And yeah, she posted a picture that is the script.
Okay.
Seven. She said, "Hi all, I'm so excited to announce this news. Sydney Prescott is coming back. It's always been such a blast and an honor to get to play Sydney in the Scream movies. My appreciation for these films and for what they have meant to me have never waned. I'm very happy and proud to say that I've been asked in the most respectful way to bring Sydney back to the screen. I couldn't be more thrilled." Well, I could actually. I could. While I've been so incredibly lucky to make these films with both the master of horror, Wes Craven, and the wonderfully talented Matt and Tyler team, I've dreamt for many years of how amazing it would be to make one of these movies with Kevin Williamson at the helm. And now it's happening. Kevin Williamson's going to direct Scream 7. This was his baby, and it's his brilliant mind that dreamt up this world. Kevin is not just an inspiration as an artist, but has been a dear friend for many years to the amazing Scream fans. I hope you're as excited as I am. See you on set at Kevin Williamson.
Yeah, I bet they very respectably backed that dump truck up to her front lawn.
Yeah.
And then released the doubloons onto her land.
What are we thinking here? Oh, by the way, the Venom 3 has a new title. This is also, can we get another breaking news? Coming to theaters this October, October 25th, Venom: The Last Dance. Honestly, funny.
Okay, sure.
And I guess that means it's the last one he's doing, which I think people have said. But, for now.
Yeah.
All right. So, yeah, let's take in the Neve news. Now, until other cast members are announced.
Right.
I can't sit here and go, boy, doesn't it suck that they threw away the new cast members that they were so lucky to fall into their laps of people like these characters. Right. Like I wish they had taken longer. Sure, of course. I think that everyone kind of needed a break from everything that happened.
Yeah.
But if Nev's back and they somehow get Courtney back and they get a couple of the young kids back, like, okay, if they're going with Nev back and we're just doing our own thing here.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, I am.
I remain optimistic, though.
I'm of two minds here. Neither of them is optimistic, I'm sorry to say.
I'm always optimistic about Scream. There's never been a bad Scream movie.
First of all, there is the grossness of just trying to plow past the whole Melissa Barrera thing.
Yeah.
With, well, hey, look, we got Neve Campbell back. We got Kevin Williams back. Look over there. Shiny, shiny.
Yes. Right. Sure.
I think that's pretty, I'm not happy about that. I think that, Melissa was done dirty. I think that the way that they just kind of lost Jenna Ortega is insane. I also think that if their opening move for this movie is, hey, we got Neve, we got Kevin Williamson, everything's great, I have absolutely no hope that they're going to follow that up with, but really, this is like a movie that we're going to put in the hands of like Haley Lou Richardson or something.
Hey,
and pass on to the next generation. I think this is just one of the many examples of how they couldn't
be less interested. Did you say Haley Lou Richardson or Hayden Panettiere?
Well, I said Haley Lou. Hayden Panettiere would be great. But yeah, I think it is. It's just a complete forfeiting of the idea of having a new thought.
Right. Well, that's what we don't know yet. That's the first casting announcement. Maybe they bring everyone. I don't know. But the idea of, like, we want to write this ship, the first step is Nev and Kevin.
Yeah.
I think is correct.
Nevin, as they say.
But if we get, like, an article tomorrow going and none of the cast is coming back and this is going to take place in a new city and not be connected to 6 or 5, then yeah. Yes, I agree with you 100%.
Do you think there's a way that they paid enough to get Nev Campbell back after shafting her out of it previously? And she's in, like, a supporting role?
I thought about that, too. But no. Like, she's the same role she had in 5.
Yeah, like, I think she's going to be the star of this one.
She's going to be the star with the children.
Not in a way that satisfies me.
Well, you don't know.
But no, just the fundamentals of that idea of, like, well, we're back to Nev Campbell as the star, and, like, maybe she'll pass it on to people again later, like, we can move on.
Anyway, that's my big news.
That is news. That is news to me. It is surprising.
Something else big happened over the weekend. The 96 Oscars.
Whoa. Hooray for Hollywood.
Hooray for Hollywood. Now, Oscars are always a big deal. They're my Super Bowl. I have an Oscar party every year. This time there was a baby present.
Yes.
And wouldn't you know it, the baby distracted me. So
maliciously?
I don't know what happened in the monologue. So I was like, holy shit, there's a cute baby here. I'm going to hang out with this baby for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't have, like, a review of the show. I do have a couple of thoughts. One being the fact that I don't really remember the monologue is maybe not my fault. None of the jokes really hit. I don't remember it being very memorable.
I think it was partially, there was some chatter going on in the room.
There was. I know. I really got to, like, stress, like, hey, guys, the show's on now.
Yeah.
So if you want a joke, go over to that side of the room. Don't sit in the middle of the room and yell to one side.
Right. But, yeah, I think, like, the monologue was fine. He made some jokes about Robert Downey.
I heard that.
His drugs.
I've heard a lot of mixed reactions to that. People who are not addicts going, "How dare you!" People who are addicts going, "Like, no, we love to talk about it." Laughter is a great form of, like, acceptance and moving on or something.
It seems to me that Robert Downey Jr. has been giving all of his acceptance speeches at the awards leading up to this. Talking about, like, hey, you know, I used to be a drug addict.
He's talked about that forever, too.
And making jokes about it. Yeah. I feel like looking at Jimmy Kimmel and being like, sir, yeah, excuse me, that is out of bounds. It's like, that's a little silly.
A joke my mom enjoyed that I would like to talk about is your movies are so long joke.
Okay.
Which, like, okay, like, yeah. And mom's like, but you got to admit, they are longer. They seem to be longer now, don't they? And I said, no. And I rattled off a bunch of classics that are like 2.5 or 3 hours long.
Yeah.
Like The Sound of Music and Bridge on the River Kwai and The Godfathers and Lawrence of Arabia and Gone with the Wind and just on and on and on. Movies were essentially, they had intermissions. They were like plays you could watch on the big screen over and over again for cheaper prices than theater. And so they were as long as a grand play or a grand opera.
Yeah. For me, it's a joke that I think has been made in the opening monologue of the past 4 Oscars.
That's my point of it, is there's no new angle on this joke. Yeah.
And it's
funny.
The point of the joke is how you don't enjoy watching the movies. And that just, like,
actively negates the,
come out and be like, oh man, isn't watching Oppenheimer a chore? Like, no.
Right.
It's
not. We're here to celebrate
the movies. Everyone in the country saw it twice.
But also, like, we're here to celebrate the movies, not discourage people from watching Killers of the Flower Moon on Apple.
Yeah. Just, like, get over it.
Yeah. And also, just, like, no one in that room finds it funny because they all decided to make the long movies.
Right.
And edit the long movies and release the long movies. I just think that there's no new angle to this joke, and shut the fuck up.
Yeah. Yeah. I completely agree. Shut the fuck up. That's it. It's over.
So here's one thing. I've heard pretty good reviews for the show.
Yeah.
People liked it this year.
I thought it was great.
Okay, why?
I thought that the presenters did a good job. I thought all the bits hit pretty much. They had like one or two big like show-stopping moments that worked really well. And there were a couple of like fun surprising winners and no really bad winners, which isn't like really in their control, but is still like a thing that you look back on it and you're like, okay, we spent all this time watching the Oscars and Coda won. It's like, that's a perfectly okay movie.
Right.
I had a fun time watching it, but like, that's the best picture. Okay. Sours the mood. I thought the, you know, they had this big build up to I'm Just Ken, crushed it. I think back on when they did the Encanto song.
That was terrible.
We don't talk about Bruno.
Yeah,
that was terrible.
The opposite of we need to talk about Bruno.
Right.
We can't.
Yeah, that was really really bad. I thought the John Cena bit was great. Him coming out with without the costume.
Right.
I thought that the I thought John Mulaney was great.
Yeah, there were some good presenter bits.
I
think, you know what, also I just want to talk about Twitter for a second.
Sure.
People going, let him host.
Uh-huh.
It's not like they're stopping him from... I'm sure they'd love it if John Mulaney hosted. He doesn't want to.
What makes you say that?
Because he would. He's a perfect choice. Yeah. He would. Comedians don't host those awards anymore, like stand-ups. I just think that it's so funny for them to be like, let him host, as if he's been begging to host. I don't know if he's ever said no.
Yeah.
But just them using that phrase is just very irritating.
Yeah, I take that to be more of like, invite him to host, which I have no indication that...
I'd love for him to host.
They'd ever do. He would do a great job. He's very funny. He's got the same sort of like even-handedness that you get out of a Jimmy Kimmel.
Yeah.
I think that so far the Academy's first choice has been Jimmy Kimmel for a number of years, and it's time for them to look towards this next guy,
yeah,
who seems like he'd be a great host for two.
Ryan
or three
Gosling
years.
Should host.
No.
Okay.
He shouldn't. I might not watch.
Why?
I find him really annoying. I'd probably watch.
Ryan Gosling or the guy we're watching on screen?
No, the guy we're watching on screen.
I'm pretty sure I said Gosling.
Yeah, I think you did.
Okay. Let Ryan Gosling host.
Ryan Reynolds is in front of my face. Ryan Gosling would be an excellent host.
He'd be great. And especially coming off the performance, I think it's like prime for him to step into that role. Okay, you mentioned bits. Now, there was the John Cena bit.
Right.
There weren't any other host bits that I recall.
Not really. He didn't do any magic.
Thank God.
He didn't go out into a theater where people were watching a movie.
I thought that was fun. I like that.
I'm just listing anything that happened now.
Sure.
Let's see. He didn't order anyone pizza.
Yeah, like what? I always liked those kind of either audience interactions normal people participating.
Yeah.
I think that makes it fun, and I think it makes the Oscars tangible. And I think that it makes the people relatable, and I always like it. I was disappointed that we had one bit from him, and it just had to do with the presenter, and that was it. There weren't any other side bits. It made the night go faster, but I like hosts that do bits. I like bits. I think they're fun.
Yeah. I did not miss them personally. I think no one did. I think they miss more often than they hit. And like Kimmel was still popping out doing his little wisecracks here and there. I don't think those worked either.
There was one that he did that I don't think worked. But anyway, I thought the show was fine. I think a lot of it was a little unmemorable as far as the hosting duty. Like the song performances were all good except for the bad song, and I'm Just Ken is I've watched it a bunch since it happened.
Yeah. Oh, it was amazing.
It was incredible.
What did you think of the acting award presentation?
I like it. They did it a few years ago or whatever. I wanted the clips. I think you could have shown a clip and then had the person talk about the person, you know? And I liked how it seemed with the women, especially the first one, the supporting actress, that they were all connected somehow to the people.
Yeah.
You know, but then like Nicolas Cage is talking to Paul Giamatti and I'm like, do you two know each other? I don't know. But like, you know, Rita Moreno doing for America Ferrera and Regina King talking to Danielle Brooks and they seem to know each other and Sally Field talking to whoever. I just like, I liked, I guess that was actress. I enjoyed that aspect of it. Did you not?
No, I thought that was also great. That was another, yeah. That was another part of it that I was like, wow, this show's like, they're really doing stuff. Like,
yeah,
I,
I'm glad they brought that back.
I love clips. Mm-hmm. I am fully on the show more clips train. And like generally speaking, I'm not going to advocate for something that gets rid of the clips.
Right.
I do think you have to pick one or the other. I think this was already like, I really enjoyed this. Okay.
Before they come out, a little montage.
Yeah, maybe.
We're getting ready to present a supporting actress. Here's a little thing.
My thing is that I think it's already quite long, this presentation, where each actor gives like a little mini speech.
Yeah.
But I think it really worked. I think all of their speeches came across as like just very well written and sincere.
Yeah.
Even with the people that I was like, I don't understand you two having like a connection that I'm aware of.
Mm-hmm.
I still got the impression that like, yeah, you know, Nick Cage like really respects this guy. Like this
right.
And I mean, it makes sense. They're actors up there. Like, I don't know who Christoph Waltz is friends with,
mm-hmm.
but I do believe that he's up there being like, you gave a really great performance. It really moved me. I recognize your craft.
Yeah.
And it was very powerful. I thought it was really cool.
I do too. I think I think it's a really fun format for it. I remember a few years ago they did like a thing where they had like when they did costume design, they had like the costumes on stage.
Yeah.
There was one year when they did costume design that they dressed the stage as a runway and had models come out in the costumes and shit.
Okay.
And I thought that was cool. Just do a, like, I need a little more showmanship in that regard. If it's production design, have, like, things from the set there. Decorate the set to look like the movies. Or just something to, like, show people what it is. They also used to, there was a year or two where they used to do that. Like, when it was editing, you would see the process of the editing happen for the movies.
Yeah.
You know, like, we had someone at our party go, like, what is editing? Like why? Like what are they giving the award for?
Yeah,
that's something that you can show the audience, and I think that that's really cool and helpful, and I think it's fun. But it was a pretty breezy show, no hiccups.
Yeah, which Al Pacino after the past few years, he did say it weird. Here's something that I've been observing. Everyone's talking about how he did not read the nominations. He just came out there and said the winner.
Right, which is fine, because all throughout the night we've seen... They sometimes do that when they go, like, all throughout the night we've seen the 10 films nominated for Best Picture. And they usually will go, here are the nominees, and then they do a thing, but, yeah.
Yeah, I specifically noticed that they did the same thing when presenting Best Song.
Yeah.
There was no moment where they said, and again, the nominees are... They just came out and announced the winner.
Yeah.
So just... For everyone out, it was clearly a production choice to not say the names of the movies.
Also, for anyone who wants some backstage secrets, the presenters don't, when they go and the nominees are, and it cuts to a montage, and you hear the presenter going, all quiet on the Western Front.
Yeah.
They're not saying that standing on the stage. They do that backstage beforehand to get the pronunciation right. They say the nominees are, then they... Don't say anything on stage and let the clip play.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So it's not like Al Pacino was going to stand up there and read 10 nominees. They would have recorded it backstage.
I do think we have to maybe reconsider who's giving out Best Picture. I feel like I really, like, obviously I understand their inclination to be like, we have to get one of the golden hands of Hollywood to come out here. We get Al Pacino, we get Liza Minnelli, we get who did Moonlight and La La Land?
Barry Jenkins. Faye Dunaway and Warren Beatty.
Yes. All these things are like, it's a good instinct. But also, I feel like more often than not, the presenter of the biggest award of the night is not at their best.
Right.
No longer seems to have their fastball.
That's why it's always a good idea. I forgot who came out of Liza Minnelli when she was like wheeled out a few years ago.
Yeah.
She had Lady Gaga with her.
Sure.
Have someone there who's, you know, can do this.
Even that still to me was like, wow, Liza Minnelli doesn't seem like she's ready for this moment right now.
So you'd rather like a George Clooney.
Yeah.
Someone who's old and distinguished, but who has their wits about them.
Yeah. If you get, I'd seen suggest like get Clooney and Pitt to come out and do it together.
Sure.
Get, I don't know, get Tom Cruise, get Leo. Like I get someone who is still like, still with it. I don't want next year to be like, hey, we've got Gene Hackman. He's coming out to give out Best Picture. And it's like, man, this guy is like 90 years old. And he's no longer like a public-facing person.
Right.
And so just does not have control of
that
muscle.
Al Pacino
anymore.
Just had a child. So as far as they're concerned, he should be virile enough to stand
sure.
on stage and read a card.
If they wanted to get him out here to have sex, then yeah, he's ready to go. But he just like it. They need to rework it a little bit, I think.
Overall, it was fine. The show, I don't know. I'm just Ken was great.
I think if you if you were able to watch it again,
I thought
free.
About watching it again. Maybe we'll tomorrow. I thought about it.
Yeah, I think you would find that it was a more satisfying show.
I had a more entertaining activity that night.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's certainly more pressing.
Baby was very, very cute. All right, let's go through some winners. Visual effects, big one. Godzilla Minus One.
Yeah. Very exciting.
Very cool. Very cool. You know, I think like the front runner other than that was The Creator, which you and I both would have just
yeah,
really that, not wanted to happen.
It was the good visual effects in that movie. But I didn't want that to win.
I will say for the sixth time in 7 years, Noah and I saw every single nominee.
I don't remember there being a year that we missed after hitting it. That's interesting.
Look it up.
I
look this up and I'll you know, go back to like the 87th Oscars right there. All right. So point being, what I think that we should do is go through the categories and just say who we would give the award to as well.
Okay.
So what is that? 86?
This is the 87th Oscars.
All right. We do it that year?
2015.
Well, wait, 2015. So is that Argo?
That is Birdman.
Birdman.
Yeah,
wasn't
Argo
that year.
Was like 2012. Wait, hang on.
Leviathan.
Yeah. Okay. This is not the not the one I was thinking of. I remember the first year we did it was the year with that movie about the little boy that disappeared.
Right. Oh, yes. That was in foreign language film.
Yeah.
Loveless.
Loveless. That's why I thought it was Leviathan. All right. So not that year.
No. Loveless.
Land of Mine. That's not it.
Guillermo del Toro. I think it's Shape of Water. Is the
yeah. Yeah, okay, here we go. So it would be 2018.
That's one. First time we ever did it. All nominees, including the shorts.
Let's see. Yeah, so now I'm just looking through all of the nominees to see if there's anything that
yeah.
we missed.
I would look in, for, you know, foreign, doc, and animated.
All right. Roma, Capernaum, Cold War, Never Look Away, Shoplifters. We saw all of those in foreign.
We saw Never Look Away. What's that?
I think so. Never Look Away is a German movie. Doesn't say. As a child during the Nazi era, Kurt Barnett visits the exhibit of degenerate art. Mesmerized by the girl with the blue. Maybe we didn't see this. maybe we missed it the next year.
All right, well, let's go the year after then.
All right, the year after that. This is this is a segment that I think we should wrap up quickly because this is gonna
be a lot of anyway. I'm pretty sure it's 6 of 7
for our
pretty
listeners.
Sure it's 6 of 7.
Yeah, we certainly haven't missed it twice.
No, it's 6 of 7. So. Visual effects, the nominees were Godzilla Minus One, The Winner, The Creator, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning, it still says Part 1 on Wikipedia, and Napoleon. What would have gotten your vote here?
This was a win for Godzilla for me.
Godzilla's probably close to for me. I would, though, pick Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning, because I think that him flying through the air is also a visual effect and took a lot of planning.
Sure.
So
I think that's fair.
Plus, the train scene's dope. They're all they're going up and down and stuff. That's
yeah,
cool.
Really, really good work for Mission Impossible. I agree.
All right, let's do original song. We had I'm Just Ken, What Was I Made For, both from Barbie, It Never Went Away, American Symphony, Was Hazy, right?
The
song for my people.
I don't know any more than you, so I will
and,
say yes.
Noah's Pick, A Fire Inside from Flamin' Hot. What Was I Made For? One. I would have given it to I'm Just Ken, though.
I think there's no other answer.
Looks up for your pick, which was The Fire Inside. So what was the reason for that?
Because I want Diane Warren to go away. And I think if they give her
it'll
an Oscar, she will vanish.
Sure.
It will never not baffle me that this wasn't like an overwhelming consensus pick for I'm Just Ken.
Okay.
Not even like take whether or not you like What Was I Made For out of it. I'm just Ken is like the Shallow of this year. There is one singular song that embodies a huge movie that everyone has seen and liked.
Yeah.
And I was like, we'll pick a different one.
No, it's for sure my pick. Original score, Poor Things, Oppenheimer, American Fiction, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, Killers of the Flower Moon. What is your pick for score? The winner, of course, here was Oppenheimer.
Yeah. This would have been very close for me between Oppenheimer and Killers.
Mm-hmm.
I probably would have voted Killers just because...
the Robbie Robertson of it all.
It's last chance to give Robbie Robertson one, and Ludwig will clearly be back.
Yeah. It's close for me between Killers and Poor Things, but I do think it is Killers as well. Best sound, Oppenheimer, Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning, Maestro, The Creator, and The Zone of Interest, which was the winner. What would you give it here?
This was another one of the great wins of the night.
Yes, absolutely.
I would have gone Zone for sure.
Me as well. My for sure winner. Makeup and hairstyling. We had Poor Things, which I think won.
Yeah.
Maestro, Society of the Snow, Golda, and Oppenheimer.
I think I probably would have gone Society of the Snow here.
Okay,
I think
that's
it,
a good
like,
call. That's fun.
It kind of perfectly straddles that line between like big and showy and impressive makeup and hairstyling without being like, all right, we get it. Like, you part her hair in the middle.
I think I would have given it to Poor Things here,
okay,
or Maestro, one of those two. But Society's a good choice. Production design, which also went to Poor Things. Barbie, Killers of Flower Moon, Napoleon, Oppenheimer round out the nominees. What are you going for here?
This is a clear Barbie.
Me as well. Barbie for sure. Costume design also went to Poor Things?
Yeah.
So you got Barbie, Killers of the Flower Moon, Napoleon, Oppenheimer. What are you picking?
I'll go Poor Things with this one.
I do too.
I think that is the like big bold aspect of
sure.
the visuals of that movie that feels the least like a little too far over the big showy line.
Right.
Like, I feel like the production design of that movie is the same way that you know, you look at an acting performance is big and loud and gives like great monologues.
Right.
It's capital A acting. It's capital A capital P production design.
Yeah.
But I think the costume was the best part of that. So I'll give it there.
Film editing, Anatomy of a Fall, Killers of the Flower Moon, The Holdovers, Poor Things, Oppenheimer.
Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yeah.
It's to have a movie that is in fact like objectively pretty long, feel just so smooth and riveting.
My pick is Anatomy of a Fall.
Okay.
Yeah. And then cinematography, but like Oppenheimer, fine. Cinematography, Kills of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Poor Things, El Conde. What would you pick here?
I'll go Killers here.
Has Hoyt never won before?
He has never won before.
Okay. So I'm not mad at it, but for me, it's 1,000% Killers here. Yeah.
I think it's pretty close between Killers and Oppenheimer to my mind, but
yeah. Animated short, Pachyderm, 9/5 Senses, Our Uniform, Letter to a Pig, and War is Over, the music of whatever. War is Over won, name recognition. One of the worst wins of the night.
Yeah, I think maybe just the worst. Certainly the worst animated short. I guess Pachyderm?
That's my number one, yeah.
Not a strong year for the shorts.
It was not a strong year for any of the shorts. I agree. Speaking of the shorts, live action. Knight of Fortune, Red, White, and Blue, Invincible, The After, and The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar. Finally, Wes Anderson, who could not be there because he's shooting a movie today. Or no, Monday.
Right.
In wherever he is. His first Oscar.
Yeah. And that's, apologies to everyone else trying to make a short film. And then Wes Anderson shows up and... Well, makes a Wes Anderson movie.
I mean, he's never won for a Wes Anderson movie.
That's true. They're not, yeah.
So, who knows? But it's a nice win. I'm happy he has one. What would you vote for here?
Yeah, it's Henry Sugar. I do want to say, I thought Knight of Fortune was, as far as the live-action shorts go, quite good. But it was Henry Sugar for me.
I would also pick Henry Sugar. I agree. Knight of Fortune is my second. And then Best Documentary Short, we had The Last Repair Shop, which won, The Barber of Little Rock, The ABCs of Book Banning, Island in Between, and Nai Nai and Waipo.
This is another...
Two strong ones here for me, two real strong. Barber of Little Rock, Last Repair Shop, both were great.
I agree. Those are the top choices, but I think Last Repair Shop was the correct choice.
Me too, and it was so nice to see that. She played the violin, right?
Yeah.
That girl go up there, and she got to hold the Oscar, and I thought that was really fun. Documentary features. We had The Eternal Memory, Bobby Wine, The People's President, Four Daughters, To Kill a Tiger, and 20 Days in Maripol. Now, I don't have a whole lot of affection for any of the movies, really. None of them blew me away, but I do think that the winner, 20 Days in Maripol, is the strongest and the best one of these.
I agree. I thought that 20 Days in Maripol was pretty affecting to me.
It was for me too. Yeah, I had the big problem with it that just, you know.
Sure. I think that was clearly the winner.
Sounded very pro Putin. I was like, give him a break.
I had objections to the premise. Like, do we know where this footage is coming from?
This movie's really against. That's weird. But good win, great speech, I thought, by him.
Yeah, absolutely.
International.
Great choice to not play him off as he was talking.
International feature. Perfect Days, Society of the Snow, Teacher's Lounge, Io Capitano, and The Zone of Interest. Just a hell of a top three there.
Yes.
Zone of Interest wins. That's my choice. It's your choice. It's highest on your top 10. Perfect Days is second for both of us. Society of the Snow. Hell of a top three.
Absolutely. And then the other two are good. Yeah.
Yeah. I like The Teacher's Lounge more than you, and I think we're both the same on Io Capitano.
Yeah. Good.
Zone of Interest is great, and his speech caused quite a stir.
Yeah, that's...
Nobody liked it.
Well, certain people didn't like it.
Well, listen.
People that wanted to read something into it chose not to like it.
In one of the biggest shocks of the night, animated feature, Robot Dreams, Nimona, Elemental, The Boy and the Heron, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, Boy and the Heron takes it.
It's thrilling to me.
Incredible. What a play. Now, I had Spider-Man in my top 10. Boy and the Heron just missed. So it wouldn't have been my choice, but I can't say I'm not mad at it. Into the Spider-Verse 1, so those guys have one already. And it's
and
real...
You have to expect that the third one is...
Gonna get it, yeah.
Get it when it comes out.
Third one's probably in line to get a picture nom. I do also want to say that with all the stories that came out about the animation team and stuff like that, it seems fitting that they just went, you know,
yeah,
not this time.
Take one off. Be nicer to your animators on the third one, and then we can be happy when you win.
It's kind of like what happened with, not the animated thing, but what happened with Lord of the Rings. The first one's out the gate, gets 13 noms, huge, you know, acting nom. Second one comes out, everyone's like, well, we're waiting for the third. We'll give it like three nominations.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's
and the third one comes out. Everyone's like, "All right, you get everything, everything, everything."
That is what fueled my my ability to pick Boy and the Heron on our pool, because I was like, "Yeah, they're gonna Two Towers it." I hope.
And you ended up winning.
Yeah, it was great.
All right, Boy and the Heron's a great choice. Adapted screenplay: Barbie, American Fiction, The Zone of Interest, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things. Cord Jefferson won for American Fiction. I thought gave a great speech. I love what he said about the $200 million movies.
Absolutely.
Especially with so many of them bombing right now. He's like, why don't you just make, you know, four $50 million movies or $25 million movies?
Yeah.
There's so many filmmakers out there who would love a shot like I got.
And you could do a lot with $20 million, guys.
According to Noah. What is your pick here?
This one's really tough for me. I think that Oppenheimer and Zone of Interest are both two very strong and like very specific works of adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
I think because of how hard it is to, I personally think, just like adapt the story of a person into an interesting narrative for a film.
Yeah.
I'm going to go Oppenheimer here, but like.
Wow. That's your pick?
Yeah. It's. Real close.
My pick is Zone. Barbie and then American Fiction. Second, Zone of Interest is third. So. All right. Original screenplay, Past Lives, Anatomy of a Fall, May, December, The Holdovers, and Maestro. Great four there.
Yes.
And boy, any of those four could have won. I would have been happy. Anatomy of a Fall wins. Thrilling.
Yeah, that was cool. That was another great win, an expected one, but still very exciting.
Oh, let's talk about the Messi thing real quick. Speaking of, you know, everyone, there was news reports that some of the rival campaigns didn't like that he kept showing up to press events because he was too likable, the dog in Anatomy of a Fall, and so he wouldn't be going to the Oscars. And yet we saw him have reaction shots. I'm sure you also saw that was footage that was shot earlier.
Yes, I did see that.
And I think that was the plan was to have him there. Did you read this?
No.
The plan was to have him there, but he kept barking. He was very excitable. There was a lot going on.
Okay.
So they're like, all right, well, let's just film it then. We have it. So it wasn't that he was actually banned.
He seemed so well-trained.
There's a lot of, listen, you imagine a dog during I'm Just Ken?
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
What the fuck is going on?
A dog is a dog. You definitely take him out for a walk then.
But he's wonderful, and Anatomy Falls great, and that was really a nice win. Who gets your pick here, though?
I truly don't know between, like, I want to say Holdovers, except, like, I think it might be Past Lives, except actually I think it might be May, December.
Right.
May, December.
Okay, mine would be Past Lives, Anatomy of a Fall, second. Supporting actress, Divine Joy Randolph, The Holdovers, Jodie Foster, Nyad, America Ferrera, Barbie, Emily Blunt, Oppenheimer, and Danielle Brooks, The Color Purple. Divine Joy Randolph wins. She sweeps. She won everything that anyone could possibly win during an award season. She gave a wonderful speech. Very happy for her. And she's also my choice here.
Yeah. Of this this slate of nominees, I think it is
a weak
not even particularly close.
Actress, yeah. Probably Danielle Brooks is my two. Supporting actor, Ryan Gosling, Barbie, Mark Ruffalo, Poor Things, Robert De Niro, Killers of the Flower Moon, Robert Downey Jr., Oppenheimer, and Sterling K. Brown, American Fiction. Robert Downey Jr. wins. I think he should have one, so great. And who would be your pick here?
Yeah, I think Downey is my pick. It's neck and neck between him and Ryan Gosling for me.
Yeah, for me, it's hands down Gosling. Instantly... Like, iconic. They're going to be, like, in theaters 100 years from now, painting him on the walls with, like, Chaplin and shit.
Yeah.
As Ken. It's just, it's an instantly iconic
fitting that he was defeated by Chaplin, then.
That's true. Best actress, Sandra Hüller, Anatomy of a Fall, Lily Gladstone, Killers of the Flower Moon, Emma Stone, Poor Things, Carey Mulligan, Maestro, Annette Bening, Naiad. Emma Stone wins her second Oscar. Everyone's upset because they don't think that she should have two, that she shouldn't have gotten one for La La Land. They're
stupid. They're wrong. I don't think
that... Who else was nominated? Can you look that up? 2017 Oscars?
Yes.
Oscars that took place in 2018. But listen, the whole Lily Gladstone thing is tough because I think that, in my opinion, Sandra Hüller gets this prize. She gave the best performance of the year to me.
Yeah.
And I think Lily Gladstone is a supporting performance and therefore should go in the supporting category, where then I would give her the award.
Okay.
So in my world, Hüller gets one, Gladstone gets one, Emma doesn't get one, even though she's fantastic. And it's a really hard performance. It's a performance that every three scenes, she has to be different.
Yeah.
Than she was in the other three scenes. 2017, she won for La La Land against whom?
Well, not the strongest lineup of nominations I've ever seen. Isabelle Huppert in Elle, Ruth Negga in Loving, Natalie Portman in Jackie, and Meryl Streep in Florence Foster Jenkins.
Elle is great.
Yes.
Loving is a very subdued performance. She does a good job. Jackie is interesting. Because Natalie kills it. But I do think Emma gets it here.
Yeah. I'm like, people don't like La La Land very much, and that's fine. They're wrong. In this particular case, like, I would have gone with Lily Gladstone here. I am not moved by people's concerns over her screen time. Mm-hmm. I think despite not being like the focal point of the movie, she is like the hero of the movie. And that is to me what makes it like a perfectly okay lead actress nomination.
Not every movie has a hero in the leading role.
Sure.
I think that if they campaigned her in supporting, which I think is correct, she wins in a heartbeat. And I think it also took away votes for her here. I think that there were probably a portion of the people who saw it and said lead.
Yeah, maybe.
And it's tough. It's a tough decision. I think the studio makes it, her representatives make it, and then she ultimately makes the decision as well. So it wasn't like there's not really one person to blame for it. But
I'm not thinking of it in like in terms of like the punditry of like, should she have done it? Would supporting have been like more likely for her to win the Oscar?
Yeah.
I think that the classification of her performance just in my heart is in a gray area.
Yeah.
And has gray, aspects of it gray that make me think like it is a leading performance.
Who gets your vote out of these, the current nominees?
It would have been Lily Gladstone.
Okay. Who's your two?
Probably Sandra Hüller.
Yes, sir. I don't not like the Emma Stone win. I think that it was an incredibly daring and difficult task to pull off, and I think she did it flawlessly.
Yeah. Emma Stone is,
and she deserves two Oscars. People can go fuck themselves.
She's probably like our greatest like young movie star.
Yeah.
And like I think your Twitter feed and your algorithm just feeds you more of these naysayers than it does me.
Yeah, maybe.
Because I see a lot of people that are like, yeah, Emma Stone is great. I don't have any problem at all with her having two Oscars. She seems like the kind of person that should.
Mm-hmm.
And La La Stone is a really good... La La Land, starring Emma Stone, is a really good movie. And people that don't like it are wrong about that.
Best actor, Paul Giamatti, The Holdovers, Jeffrey Wright, American Fiction, Coleman Domingo, Rustin, Bradley Cooper, Maestro, and the winner, Cillian Murphy, for Oppenheimer. A good win. I'm happy that Cillian... I'm not a Cillian head... I think he's good, but he doesn't like make me excited that he's in a project.
Sure.
Having said that, I think it's cool that he won, and I think it's the first time an Irish-born actor won that award.
Yeah.
So that's cool. I was like, Jeffrey Wright, Irish somehow? I don't know. Who would have gotten your vote here?
Yeah, I think I would have gone Killian. I think it's very close between him and Paul Giamatti.
Yeah.
In another year, I would have been tremendously happy with Paul Giamatti winning.
Yeah.
And I think if it had gone same thing with like Emma Stone winning, if Paul Giamatti had won instead, I wouldn't have been like, they didn't pick the one I think it should have been. I think for Killian, like, it's just kind of the performances are both kind of more or less equally as good in my mind. And so central performance in like one of the defining movies of the year and the defining movie of the Oscars is like, that's a tiebreaker for me.
Sure. I do want to say about Lily is that, I think that she's on everyone's radar now. And I think the next one, if she knocks it out of the park, it's a home run for an Oscar. My pick is Paul Giamatti. I think it's a perfect performance. I think it's when you get an actor and a role and they mesh that well, it's hard for me not to root for them. I think Jeffrey Wright is second for the same reasons. And I won't tell you where I have Killian. Director, Justine Tree, Anatomy of a Fall, Jonathan Glazer, Zone of Interest, Martin Scorsese, Killers of the Flower Moon, Yorgos Lanthimos, Poor Things, and the winner, his first Oscar, Christopher Nolan, Oppenheimer, finally takes home Best Director. The blockbuster director of this generation finally has one for his World War II epic. Makes me think of someone, partially shot in black and white.
Sure.
Makes me think of another blockbuster director who kept getting nominated and couldn't do it. And I wonder if that person handed him his Oscar on Sunday. Oh, wait, I think he did.
You'll have to go back and watch the show again.
Steven Spielberg handed him his Oscar after being nominated for Jaws, Close Encounters, I think, E.T., Raiders, Color Purple. I don't know if he was nominated for Color Purple, actually.
Okay.
And never won. And then finally Schindler's List came along and he won. So I'm happy Christopher has one. It wouldn't have been for this movie. I think there were better options in the category. He's my number four on this list.
Uh-huh.
Does he get your vote here?
My pick for like personally, director do I think was best of the five would be Scorsese.
Who would you vote for? Okay.
If I'm awarding the Academy Award, like I get carte blanche, I'm giving it to Nolan.
Wow.
Like he should have one. And this is as good an opportunity as any. I thought the movie was very good. I am not in the sort of more down on it camp that some hosts of this podcast are.
Throwing me under the bus.
That's fine. You can be. You can publicly support your.
I've done it enough. I'm trying not to do it during our winning Best Picture. Trying to be more up about it.
Sure. I think it is a hugely successful movie of his and good. This isn't like, oh, we gave Nolan the award for Scent of a Woman.
Right.
Strike while the iron is hot before we have to give it to him for something that stinks.
I would have given it to Justine Tree, then Glazer, then Scorsese, then Nolan. Picture. We had Past Lives. In my order, we'll go. Past Lives, The Holdovers, Anatomy of a Fall, The Zone of Interest, Killers of the Flower Moon, Barbie, American Fiction, The Winner, who I'll say in a moment, Maestro, and then Poor Things. And, of course, the winner is Oppenheimer.
Yeah.
If I remember your list correctly, you're giving yours to your favorite movie of the year, which is Killers.
Yeah. This is another case. Killers of the Flower Moon, I think, was the best movie of the year. I kind of think that like Oppenheimer is like objectively the correct choice for Best Picture.
Mm-hmm.
I have found myself more and more falling into that camp where like the Academy Awards aren't necessarily about awarding the very best thing so much as they are like lionizing a particular year in film. And I think that Oppenheimer was kind of like the movie of the year.
Yeah.
I support this win. I think it was right, even if it wasn't the best movie.
You know, I think that a lot of you don't. I'm sure if I rattle off a bunch of stats that I had looked up, you'd all get bored. So I didn't look any up. I will say that Emma Stone is the 15th actress in history to win multiple Oscars for Best Actress. We had Luis Rayner, Betty Davis, Olivia de Havilland, Vivian Lee, Ingrid Bergman, Elizabeth Taylor, Katharine Hepburn won it four times, Glenda Jackson, Jane Fonda, Sally Field, Jodie Foster, Hilary Swank, Meryl Streep, Frances McDormand won it three times, and now Emma Stone. Good company to keep. And in cool news, it has been 23 years since the best, 22 years since the best animated feature Oscar was given out to first winner.
The first winner at all?
Yep.
Shrek.
Yep. And this is the first time a PG-13 film has won that award.
Yeah. That's what I thought you were leading into. And so then when you pivoted to just what was the first winner, I was like, oh, that wasn't what I was expecting.
Which just makes me think it's weird that Into the Spider-Verse was PG.
Can
you Google that?
Sure.
Into the Spider-Verse won, right? Yeah.
Yeah,
it definitely won. So just do Into the Spider-Verse MPA rating.
It's PG.
Huh. So weird. Anyway,
I think you get some latitude when you're making a Spider-Man cartoon.
Sure.
Even if perhaps there are elements of it that might warrant guidance.
Oscars are great. Can't wait for them next year.
I agree.
Get another host. I love Jimmy. I thought he did a great job in his tenure, but he ain't no Billy Crystal.
Another host. It's time to move on from good things. You don't want to wear out their welcome, and I think we're getting close with Jimmy.
Also, the audience went up a little bit, which is great.
Yeah.
People thought there'd be a bigger jump just because of the Barbenheimer of it all.
Sure.
But an increase is an increase. 19.8 million people watched the ceremony.
I'll take it. Maybe we'll get 20 next year.
All right.
Top fives.
Yeah.
First, mine, okay. Of course, the exciting top five of the two.
The only one we care
about. Kung Fu. Kung Fu.
No,
Fanda.
No, you can't just.
Kung Fu.
No,
Panda
we can't just breeze past that. Kung Fu.
Kung Fu.
Kung Fu.
His name's almost Poo. He's a bear.
There's a lot
of layers to this.
Kung Poo, enter the butt.
I did this on purpose. Exit the butt, usually.
Well, the enter the fist is the Kung Pao.
Sure.
Okay, good.
Anyway, Kung Fu Panda 4 was released.
Can't wait for you to talk about the top 10, which the number one was Dung Part 2. Get in another poop joke.
Yes. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Jack Black is the star of Kung Fu Panda.
Yeah.
He is in a band called Tenacious D. Mm-hmm. As such, I have ranked my top five Tenacious D songs.
Wow. Does this include the soundtrack?
To the movie?
Yeah.
Yes, it does.
Okay.
It also includes the soundtrack to Kung Fu Panda 4, because my number five is their cover of Hit Me Baby One More
Time.
Is it
still just a minute 20, or is it the full song?
No, it's a full song.
That's great.
It's on Spotify.
Okay,
you gotta look it up.
Great.
It's really good. I've been listening to this a lot since it was released. Just brings me a great amount of joy. Jack Black sings it well. The way his voice kind of pitches itself. It's really fitting.
Yeah.
Great choice for them to cover Hit Me Baby One More Time. Number four. From the Tenacious D film is Beelzebos. I am complete.
Okay, go ahead.
I could probably still do the whole thing. Maybe later. All
right. fuck.
Then we'd have to pay for it. Okay. This is the climax of the Tenacious D movie, and it's just a tremendous amount of fun.
Paul F. Tompkins is Satan.
Is he?
I think he's the guy who comes out and turns into Satan.
I thought it was Dave Grohl.
Dave Grohl plays Satan. Paul F. Tompkins. Satan becomes like.
Oh, I see. So Paul F. Tompkins is the man.
I'll
and
find
then it.
It
grows into Dave.
Yeah,
Bob.
I'm pretty sure it's on Max. I'll find
okay.
it.
Okay. I see. Well, good for him. Getting a little movie role there. It's a really fun song. Great showing for both Jack Black and Kyle Gass.
Mm-hmm.
They got great parts. And it tells a good story. It's a lot of fun. Number three, also from the Tenacious D movie.
Kickapoo.
Kickapoo, yes.
Oh, yeah.
I think actually the best song from the movie for a while. Well, I would have said, well, of course it's Beelzebub.
One of the all-time, what are those called in musicals? Where We Are songs. There's like introduction songs. Where they
I'm not sure what the...
Oh, I think they have a term.
What the name, they probably do. Everything in the theater has a term. But yeah, it's a great introduction to what's going on. Really just Jack Black going, a little bit of Meatloaf, a little bit of Dio. But it's got some just really fucking funny lines. He talks about slicing off the dragon's balls with his sword.
Yeah.
Just never fails to make me laugh. Number two.
It's gotta be Fuck Me Hard.
Well, it's Fuck Her Gently.
Doesn't matter. I was right.
It doesn't have to be Fuck Me Hard. Fuck Her Gently. Probably the first Tenacious D song I knew.
Sure.
I think a lot of people's introduction to them, maybe. I don't know. I mean, there's not a lot of interesting stuff to say about just like, it's really fucking funny. But like, it's really fucking funny. And then, of course, number one, also really fucking funny. Great to do at karaoke night. Tells a good story, has a lot of interesting bits. Is tribute.
Yeah, of course.
Which is not the greatest song in the world.
No.
But again, make
sure.
Sorry,
can you take that again? Just say that line again.
Which is not the greatest song in the world.
No!
It's just a tribute. It just makes me really happy. All their stuff. Jack Black's really good. Into our actual top five. Yeah. This weekend was started by the release of Kung Fu Panda 4, which made $57.9 million. In second place was Dune Part 2, which made $46.2 million. It was a 44% drop. That is up to $157.2 million. Number three was Imaginary, which opened to $9.9 million. Cabrini opened at number four with $7.1 million. And then number five was Bob Marley, One Love, which made $4 million, a 45.1% drop. That is up to $89.3 million.
Yeah, listen. Oh, good. Our first one is...
Kung Fu Panda 4 at the top, 57.9.
You know, people had said like last week, they're like, oh, yeah, this is going... See, there he is. That's PFT.
Yeah, okay.
When people had said that, oh, yeah, this is going to open over 50, I said, what? You know, the last one opened... So the first one opened to 60, and the second one opened to 47. I remember being like, oh, that's weird. It seemed like it was classic case of like a breakout sequel. And then they waited 5 years to release the third one over the Chinese New Year in end of January to 41. And it had good legs, made 143, but it was kind of like, all right, so, you know, this just for some reason wasn't a franchise that carried through here. And then this 58, I don't know if it's the universal marketing power. I don't know if it's all the trailers attached to Migration. I think that it's a lot of... I think that we're getting to a point where a lot of these animated films are reaching a younger generation and an older generation. I think that people who saw Kung Fu Panda when they were 8 are now... it came out so long ago. Are now... 24.
Yeah.
I realized I did 8 because I was like, oh yeah, 2008 it came out, so they were born in 2000. Yeah, 24. And I think that they're now seeing that it's cool and want to go see it again. Or, you know, we had the whole Minions thing. I think that's helping here.
Sure.
Just 58's a very surprising number and very cool.
Yeah. I think I'm
very happy
because,
for Jack.
The fans all hated the Furious Five, and now that they got rid of them, they're happy to go to the movies again.
Wow.
I mean, I wouldn't have pegged this at all. I think the lack of kids fare definitely helps it out.
Yep.
But like we've seen time and time again when we've looked at like, oh man, there's nothing out for kids. Anything will pop big, and they just don't always.
Yeah, so I mean, again, I think the drought does help here, but it's a huge number, and it's a great win for Universal, who is taking over DreamWorks Animation, and I think bodes well for a sequel, and maybe bodes well for the live-action How to Train Your Dragon movie they're making right now.
Okay, that's interesting.
So we'll see.
In second place was Dune Part 2, which made $46.2 million, a 44% drop. It's up to 157.2.
Yeah, it's a good number. It's going to cross 200 by the end of next weekend. What's the worldwide total, if you would click on that, please?
I would be happy to click on it and tell you that the worldwide total is $374 million.
So we're still looking at like a movie that's going to gross like 250, maybe close to 3, depending on how legs stabilize here. And then, you know, not explode overseas, but get like 600, 700.
Uh-huh.
So it's a great total, especially domestically. Especially can, you know, it's hard to compare it to the first one. The first one came out in October 2021, just weird time. I'm not going to compare it to that, but it has passed the total by a lot. That grossed 100 million.
Yeah.
We're not well past that, but it's going to cruise through 200 million and we'll see how much higher it can go. It's a good hold.
Yeah. Interesting thing about Dune Part 2, it gained 3 theaters this weekend.
Wow.
Imagine being the 3 theaters that are like, why the fuck didn't we get Dune? What's going on?
I think
on
it was
there?
Why do we only have Dune at 1 theater or 2 theaters? We can have it at 3.
But yeah, that's like 44%. That's a really really that's cool drop for such a high opening. The third place movie was Imaginary, which is not If as I thought it was for a second. It's the horror movie about the bear. Made $9.9 million.
That guy actually did.
Yeah, Werner Herzog's Imaginary.
You should never watch this. Man, that ending still fucking rocks me, dude. When he listens to it.
Yeah. No, I agree.
You should never listen to this.
They should put that back out. Grizzly Man.
Harrowing. What did it open to?
$9.9 million.
All right, so whatever. You know, it's a Blumhouse that nobody really cared about. Made by Jeff Ladlow, I think is his name. He did Wadlow. He did Truth or Dare, and then opened to like 14 or 12 or something. So we're a little bit below that point. I think there's too much in the marketplace in this era of the box office to just release a kind of a shitty PG-13 horror movie and have it pop.
Yeah.
$9 million is probably the most that this could have possibly gotten, especially with no one in it who's, you know, a name. We saw a lot of trailers for this movie and then hadn't, now I'm thinking about it, for like 3 months.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that because we stopped going to the movies, kind of?
Yeah, it's
we're doing our Oscar stuff.
Yeah, it's probably because the Oscars just like...
Robot Dreams didn't have, and Marvel Genius had no trailers. Il Capitano. Il Capitano didn't have Imaginary playing before it.
Yeah, I think the steadfast pursuit of watching all the Oscar nominees is what happened. It's also why in the back of my mind, I'm like, why are they releasing this? Night Swim just came out.
Right. I was going to say, if we saw Night Swim, we probably would have seen this trailer.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, if we weren't doing the Oscar push, we'd have seen Night Swim.
Yeah. It's an okay opening. I don't know how much. I'll look up how much it costs, but probably not a lot. What's next?
What if they just started spending a lot on their movies? They just forgot the mission statement. We're like, we can't fail. We'll spend $30 million on Imaginary.
Then they'd be out of business. It costs $10 to $12 million.
Yeah, so they did it again. Good for them. Yeah.
Well, this should... I guess there was a little bit of effects in this, but whatever.
Yeah. Fourth place was Cabrini, which made 7.1 in its opening weekend.
Yeah, it's made by the people who made Sound of Freedom. It's about a nun. Yeah. I have nothing else to say. How much did it make?
7.1
per theater.
$1 million per theater was $2,500.
That's okay. It's all right. I don't know. It's long. It's like 240 something.
That's very long.
Yeah. So I have nothing to say about.
Have to imagine.
I have nothing to say about these religious movies. Like, sorry. If one opens though 25, I'll talk about it. But whatever.
Yeah. I thought this was gonna be like a biopic kind of thing. Like I figured it would be about the person they well. But not like a way, not a biopic that
Cabrini
supports
Green?
Jesus.
Oh,
but just like, hey, this is an interesting person. I didn't realize it was like specifically a religious focus thing. So that's interesting. But I also have nothing more to offer. It's Speaking of biopics, Bob Marley One Love came in fifth with $4 million. 45% drop. It's up to 89.3.
How much did it lose theater-wise?
It lost 626 theaters.
So what's it at right now?
2,700.
That's pretty good. It's at 89 and made six, five?
Four.
Four.
Three, two,
100 is going to be tough, but hey, listen, it's a huge hit already, so it doesn't need it.
Yeah, maybe they'll like really goose it at the end if it manages to hang around for a while.
And I got nothing else on the box office. Let's move on.
All right. Well, then it's time to play everybody's favorite game. Did it make more or less than Kung Fu Panda 4? The game where each and every week you tell me whether three movies opened better or worse than this week's top opener. And of course, for a bonus point, you can tell me the year each movie came out.
The number is 57.
The number is 57.9.
All right, we'll go with 50. All right, go ahead.
All right, for your first film, which I did not really consider the implications of, I was just like, oh that's fun, is the first Kung Fu Panda.
Less.
Yes.
This and one 2008.
Did open to less than the first Kung Fu Panda by just a couple million dollars.
Yeah.
And it did open in 2008. Yeah, it didn't. While I was putting it together, the didn't even occur to me, like, oh yeah, like he'll have looked up the Kung Fu Panda franchise.
Yeah.
And we'll have these stats at the ready. I was like, oh, that's fun. That came out. It opened to pretty similar.
That's why I looked it up.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to see if it opened to like 40, I wouldn't have cared, but I wanted to see how it ranked with the top ones. Kind of did well.
Your second film. It does not star Jack Black, but maybe it should have. Spectre.
Oh, Spectre. More. I think it's in the 60s.
I'm realizing that I
stumped him, and he had the answers.
No, I think I wrote this. I wrote these down wrong. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
So your answer is that Spectre opened to more than
Kung Fu Panda 4.
Yes. Okay. That is correct.
Okay.
What I wrote down on my sheet was less because I was like, yeah, Kung Fu Panda made less than this, but that's not the game.
Okay.
So you're correct.
And famously came out in 2015.
Yes. That is the most famous part of Spectre, the release year. 4 for 4 so far. Can you bring it home with your final film, Tron Legacy?
Oh, that opened over Christmas, so I don't know which number we're talking about, but I will go with less.
I have a release date of December 17th.
Okay, so I'll still say less.
Less is correct.
Would that make like 40?
44 yeah. Open to.
Yeah. Getting a third one, Tron Ares or some shit.
Yeah.
What a cast. By the way, they added three people to that Jason Reitman SNL movie. Remember I keep saying, like, you know, I know you don't like the director, but it's got a fucking hell of a young person cast.
Yeah.
So they added Kaia Gerber, who's the girl from Bottom. She's the one that Rachel liked.
Okay.
They added the guy from No Hard Feelings, the kid.
Yeah, yeah.
And Finn Wolfhard. I'm like, this cast is stacked with young actors.
Yeah.
This is cool.
It's now getting to the point where there's so many people in it, you can't actually feature a lot of them in a meaningful way.
That's probably true, but it makes me go, can we just do like one of these a year, and you just do SNL through the years, and they get older, and they play these people until we get to SNL 2024, you know, 50 years from now, and the kid from The Fabelmans is now as old as Lorne Michaels.
What year did Tron Legacy come out?
Oh, dude. 2010.
That's correct. Your second 6-point week in a row. I've got to start trying a little harder to balance this game, but congratulations on your decisive, incredible
victory.
Can't
wait for Tron Ares starring Jared Leto and a bunch of other people who I actually like.
Gross. Come and gone from a theater near you, Brian. Are you ready to go back in time?
Yep.
To 2010.
Yeah.
The release year of Tron Legacy. But not the release weekend. This weekend instead.
Oh.
Week 10, March 5th, saw two movies released in the first and second spot.
March 5th. I'm sorry. What was the year I was making
2010.
Noises. Hey, thanks. Clash of the Titans.
No.
Remember the Titans.
No.
Wrath of the Titans.
No.
Okay.
The Titans are not involved.
Attack on Titan.
No. One of these movies.
Titan A.E.
did way better than the other.
Okay. Couldn't quite. I couldn't actually see, but there was the word suddenly got bigger.
I see.
When you went to the page, and I was like, whoa.
Well, that was the second place.
The poster has a color on it.
right, your second clue.
The words get bigger if I click this. This is your first clue. Is it like a Tyler Perry comedy?
No, it's not.
Hmm.
The number one is a huge release.
Okay. Alice in Wonderland.
Yes.
Okay. I know that came out shortly after Avatar. That made 113 million.
116.
I was going to say 17. Damn.
Well, you didn't go over. Your price is righted.
Thank
price
you.
Price is righted it.
Yeah, we got to get you dinner. you're fading here.
I could never speak.
I have to do
well.
Number two.
Yeah, number two.
You speak. You have to speak well. You speak way better than me. I'm the one who stumbles over shit and goes, "Did I just say that?" 10 minutes later, and you're like, "Yeah." And I go, "Oh, I meant this instead." And you're like, "I know."
Yeah, I figured it out.
The second place film. This I'll need clues for.
Yes.
Jumper.
No, it is not Jumper. All right. Let's see. This is a crime drama. Well,
Contraband.
No.
Okay.
Is a four-hander.
Whoa.
With a well-known director.
Oh, shit.
Four gentlemen star in this film.
Okay.
Not super young. Any of them. I mean, it's not like it's not like Old Dogs or anything, but not who I'd expect to be starring in this movie.
Okay.
Excuse me, I have to sneeze.
Oh, bless you. He did sneeze, if you didn't hear it.
All right, let's see. Let
me see it?
I have not seen this. Mm. I do not know if you have.
Okay.
I think it's about a 50-50 shot.
All right.
Let me give you some of the supporting cast.
Sure.
This movie featured Vincent D'Onofrio, featured Will Patton, Michael K. Williams.
Okay, I get it. It's a crime movie. All those people are in crime movies.
Logan Marshall Green, I think, is a person. Jesse Williams.
Yeah, you'd recognize Logan Marshall. He was in Upgrade.
Okay,
yeah.
Got it.
Who's the other one? Jesse Williams?
Jesse Williams, yeah.
Okay.
Ellen Barkin.
Keep going. I love it. Keep going.
All right. Let's see.
Give me one of the main people.
Okay. Let's see. Which of these is least likely to give up the game here? I'll give you the one that surprised me most and might just do it in. Richard Gere.
Arbitrage.
No.
Damn.
Should have been Arbitrage.
Richard Gere.
Richard Gere.
Nope. Keep going.
Okay. Wesley Snipes.
What? This wasn't a movie? No one saw this. I never saw this. Wesley Snipes. Keep going.
Don Cheadle.
Keep going.
Ethan Hawke. Those are the four.
This is not Street Kings. That was...
No.
I don't know what this is.
It was directed by Antoine Fuqua.
I don't know what this is.
It is set in New York City.
Oh, okay, hold on. No. Is this something with Bronx?
No, but think of the...
I am Queens Boulevard.
It is not Queens Boulevard. not the Bronx, but what are some other
Tribeca.
Subdivisions? No.
Queens.
No.
Boulevard. Manhattan.
No.
Brooklyn.
Maybe.
Oh, Motherless Brooklyn. Brooklyn Kings.
No and no.
Brooklyn Babies.
If you were a member of the Brooklyn Police Department.
Brooklyn PD.
How would they refer to you as, like,
Brook baby.
You're one of Brooklyn's.
Well, Brooklyn's finest.
Yeah.
Who the fuck cares what that is?
Richard Gere's in it.
Oh, Richard Gere's in it.
Why was Richard Gere in it? I don't know.
Jesus
Christ.
But he's
top billed on Wikipedia.
That came in second?
It did.
$8 million.
13.
That's so much money.
I know.
For Brooklyn's finest.
Your disrespect for Brooklyn's finest
Holy
is showing.
Holy shit. Great.
That's one of those movies that should have been like the fourth place one, and I'm like, I'm not having you guess it, but it's
yeah.
funny. But it came in second place.
No, that's fucking
You got to guess the second places.
That's
what do you
wild.
Got?
Wild.
Nothing else happened that weekend.
All right. Let's do a quick early reaction.
All right.
Inside Out 2 is coming out. Riley's now older. There's new emotions. Mindy Kaling and Bill Hader said no because they weren't paid enough because they undercut them.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. First one was a huge hit. Pixar's biggest original hit. Maybe ever. I don't know at this point. So we're going to watch the trailer. Noah hasn't seen it. Then we're going to record about it. He'll give his instant reaction and his opening weekend prediction. So I'll just cut the mics. But, I mean, I don't even have to say this at this point. So I won't. Only in theaters, June 14th, Inside Out 2. Noah, what'd you think of the trailer?
I don't know. I think
knowing that Pixar is famous for not making good trailers for some reason.
Yeah, that's true. That is a characteristic of theirs. And with that in mind, like, maybe here's what I'll say. I think that the first time they made this movie, they did a good job of casting people that weren't like the five biggest names they could get.
Mm-hmm.
But are like, oh, man, like Phyllis from The Office is like a really good choice to be the sad one. That is who that is, right?
Yep.
Thank you. Good. Lewis Black, a comedian that was not in vogue when this movie came out.
Yeah, a few years past his vogueness.
Yeah, there was a time when he was huge. And I feel like they're continuing that, getting like, you know, Maya Hawke has a rising star, but she's not like a huge name. Or
right.
Anything.
And it's contracted that Io DeBerry needs to be in everything from now
yeah,
on.
Yeah, as well it should be. And
oh, for sure.
Paul Walter Hauser is like, it's just like a fun guy who's not, he's also not a name. So I like that they're doing that. My concern with this movie is that I feel like at a certain point, Pixar, like they kind of became self-aware of their thing is that like we represent the complexities of childhood in a digestible way, mm-hmm. in an abstract but understandable way. And the first Inside Out was kind of the apotheosis of their whole mission statement. And I worry that like doubling down on that is going to get a little too, like, now it's important that we explain anxiety to kids. And so because of that, I'm hesitant about the movie. Just like, the first one was really good, and it's going to be hard to recapture that again.
That's true. I do think that, you know, having it be a teenager thing helps it open up to explore that, like, it won't feel like a retread because it is a different time in a person's life and there are different emotions to explore. It feels like a very natural case for a sequel, I should say.
Yeah.
I think a
different way to put it is that, like, I feel like the first one was like a fun Amy Poehler movie first and a treatise on childhood emotionality second.
Mm-hmm.
And I worry that with the way they've gone and just the way that like culture has gone, this movie might be more inclined to be an explainer about anxiety first and like a funny cartoon second.
Right. The idea of them getting bottled up and like, it'd be like, for this time in our life, it's not about joy and it's not about disgust. It's about these other emotions make sense. Putting like the idea that you feel like you have to put aside how you felt as a kid and you're an adult now, even though you're 13. All that makes sense. And I think the sarcasm chasm is very funny.
Yeah, that's a well-observed little linguistic thing.
And so I am hopeful. They don't make good trailers, so I'm just hoping that we get a good one here. What do you think it opens to on June 14th?
I'm going to be, I think, stupidly optimistic. Pixar hasn't had a hit in a while.
Uh-huh.
They're in their downswing, but this has got to be one of their... like their biggest property that hasn't already like crested.
Yeah.
Like Toy Story still, I'm sure, has mileage on it, but it has peaked.
Well, we're getting another one.
Yeah. And like, I'm not saying Toy Story 5 is going to fail.
Yeah. No,
but
I understand.
It's not going to be the most successful one. This one still might. So I'm going to say that this opens to $70 million.
All right. Recommend a movie for the folks this week / weekend.
I believe I do this every year. One of the favorite parts of when I was younger and like I first started watching the Oscars
mm-hmm.
was going to see the Best Picture winner every year after it had won.
Okay.
And I have to imagine Oppenheimer is going to be made available
in some theaters. Yeah,
in
least,
some theaters
sure.
to watch. And so go check it out if you haven't, or if you have and you just want to do it again. I think it's a fun tradition that I probably only did for like 3 or 4 years.
No, that's cool. I would say I think it's a good choice. There's going to be a lot of Oscar bumps, so I would say yes, yeah, seek out an Oscar winner, yeah. Be it Oppenheimer, or I'll just make a recommendation. If it's getting a bump because it won original screenplay, go see Anatomy of a Fall.
Yeah. If you all go see Poor Things, my prediction might come true. It needs to make $6.1 million.
And won a lot of Oscars, so it, maybe they really push it. I don't know, though. The post-Oscar glow is something that has faded over time.
Sure.
All right, wrap us up. Plug us up.
All right, you can find us at whatsintheboxoffice.com. We are on Twitter at @WitBoxOffice. It's also our Instagram handle. I am on Twitter at Noah Drucki.
I'm at Brian DeServer, DaSurber.
Of course, the feed for our podcast can be found
of
anywhere podcasts
can
are
be found.
We are on... Spotify, we are on Apple Podcasts, and unlike some broadcasts, we are not showing up an hour earlier than expected.
No, we're a couple days late. Hey, listen, next week our tournament starts.
It never stops this time of year.
Our tournament, which of course is called Multiplex Madness Presents Second Run.
Yes, indeed.
So we will be working through some of our past tournaments, films that didn't make the draft, and giving them a shot at the title and then becoming the ultimate second run movie.
The most overlooked movie in our history.
That's right. Tune in for that. We'll get half of the 32 contenders. We'll battle it out next week. And that is going to be it. This has been What's in the Box Office. Wait, you didn't finish the plugs.
Yeah, I did.
I said Brian DeServer, DaSurber.
I think so. Or if you didn't, I just blew past it because I said I'm on Twitter at Noah Drucki, and
all
then
right.
You spoke. I kind of just get into like a little mind palace when I do that.
I'm also trying to like figure out dinner. So listen, who knows what we said? But anyway, see you next week. This has been What's in the Box Office. I've been your host Brian,
and I've been your host Noah.
Go see a movie.